जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिभर धारी। जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिभर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरा बनचारी बनचारी जमुना तीरा बनचारी बनचारी। जया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जैया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य आशतोतर शत शिष्यमाद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की। जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज गचार्य आशतोतर शत शिष्यमाद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की गरंतराशिम भागवतं की निताई गौर प्रेमनंदी। ओ ग्लोरी सुदे असेंबो देवोतिस ओ ग्लोरी सुदे असेंबो देवोतिस ओ ग्लोरी सुदे असेंबो देवोतिस ओ ग्लोरी सु शिशि गुरु वंशी गुरंग। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय reading from Shrimad Bhagavatam canto 10 the Saman Banam chapter 25 Krishna lift Govardhan hill text number 20 and 21. Ataha bhagavam gopam himbatatta brajau kasha jatopa jo shambhishata गिरिगर्तं सगोदना अथाह भागवं गोपं हिम्बताता ब्रजौकशा जतोपा जोशं विशाता गिरिगर्तं सगोदना अथाह भागवं गोपम हिम्बाताता व्रजौकशा यथोपाजोषम्बीशाता गिरिगर्तं सगोदना अथाह भागवं गोपम हिम्बाताता व्रजौकशा यता पाशो यसं विशता गिरिगर्तं सगोधन अथ देन आहा अड्रेस भगवान द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड गोपम द काउहर्ड्स हे ओ Amba, mother, tata, O father, Braja O Kashaha, O residents of Braja, Jata Upajosham, as suits your pleasure, Bishata, please enter, Giri, this hill, Gartam, the empty space below, Sagodana, together with your cows. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Lord then addressed the cowherd community. O Mother, O Father, O residents of Braja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur provides the following insight in this regard. Ordinarily, a large cowherd community, which includes many thousands of cows, calves, bulls, and so on, could not feed under the base of a medium-sized hill like Sri Govardhan. However, because the hill was in ecstasy, being touched by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he acquired inconceivable power and even felt the hundreds of deadly thunderbolts thrown upon his back by angry Indra to be offerings of soft, fragrant flowers. At times, Sri Govardhan was not even aware that the thunderbolts were striking. From the Harivansa, the Acharya has also quoted Sri Krishna himself as saying, Trailokyan api utsahate rakshitum kim punar brajam. Quote, Sri Govardhan can give shelter to all the three worlds, what to speak of the simple land of Braja. End of quote. When Indra's attack began and Krishna lifted the hill, the deer, wild hawks, and other animals and birds standing on the hill's flanks climbed up to his peak, and even they did not experience the slightest distress. Text number 21. Natrasa ihaba karyo maddastadri nipatanat bata varsa baje nalam tatranam bihitan hiva. Translation. You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand. And don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from this affliction has already been arranged. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, through this chapter, we've been discussing the awesome powers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna, who in his original transcendental form as this beautiful, delicate cowherd boy, he was displaying these inconceivable potencies. And take into consideration that the potencies that Indra was displaying from the perspective of material, the material, you know, reality, is beyond imagination. And sometimes we become completely in awe and we feel how insignificant the human society is in the face of the powers of material nature. When there is a display of some manifestation of power of material nature, such as, you know, a big hurricane or tornado or earthquake or something like that. You know, when we experience that big earthquake that caused, you know, the huge tsunamis that destroy basically so many parts of the world in the Indian Ocean, and cause this amazing devastation. Or when we, you know, see the devastation caused by a huge hurricane, like, you know, some years ago, that Katrina hurricane that destroyed basically the whole coast of Louisiana and destroyed the city New Orleans. So, you know, this displays actually, you know, I don't know if you've been in one of those, you know, events like that. The only one I remember being was in an earthquake. And I was very little, so I don't remember very well, but it was an earthquake that, you know, completely destroyed so many buildings in the city, in my city, you know, when I was born. And that was not a huge destruction in comparison to other, you know, catastrophes that have hit the world, you know, in so many ways. But being in the middle of one of those things and then you feel that type of power, you know, is very traumatic. And that is nothing in comparison to the type of display of power that Indra was showing in this case. Because he was using the powers of devastation. These are the arrangements that are made. He was using the type of arrangements that were made when there is partial destruction of the universe. You know, we hear the narrations, in the Bhagavatam, there is narrations of this partial destruction, that there is, you know, first the whole world becomes covered by this water, but inundated. So we can only imagine, for us who, you know, grew in the West, we always heard the narrations of the Ark of Noah and this devastation of the world by, you know, being completely inundated, you know. But it's a similar narration in the Bhagavatam. So this destruction of the whole universe, the partial destruction of the universe, this is the power that he was displaying on the little, simple land of Vrindavan. So he basically say, okay, he is going to use his greatest power, display of his full power. It's like, you know, sometimes we hear that the president of the U.S., who is the most powerful country in the world, he has at his hand the capacity to send the whole nuclear power that this country holds, which is the, you know, the most powerful one. So he can destroy just one flick of a finger can destroy a whole country. That power. Therefore, you know, people are very concerned to have a sane leader that is not going to just go nuts and destroy something. So Indra displayed his full power, and then we cannot even imagine from the material perspective the size, the amount of power that Indra has. And all this display of power was basically nothing. It was like nothing. It was like, you know, child's game. It was like insignificant in the presence of Krishna. Which we hear in the narration is like, you know, Krishna is almost joking about this whole thing. It's like, you know, not even to be taken serious. So just imagine this display of material power, you know, this clouds of devastation, and the description that, you know, is inconceivably scary. You cannot even imagine, because none of us have ever seen or experienced in the world something like that. That's only experience, you know, again, at the time of that partial devastation that comes at the end of every day of Lord Brahma, which means, you know, these millions of years, you know, earthly years. So Krishna, as this big display of material power was happening, then he goes and, okay, he runs towards Govardhan. Yesterday we was hearing that as he runs towards Govardhan, then nothing was happening to him. He was not getting wet. He was not getting there was no wind hitting him. There was, you know, it's like he went in, he went out, and nothing, he was not being touched by the water. He was not touched by the wind. So basically, he's not doing anything to him, all this display of things. Now he goes and leaves this mountain like it's described, a child picking a mushroom. Insignificant, he displayed his power. So he leaves this mountain, and as he leaves this mountain, then he calls all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, come, take shelter on this mountain. Now, this mountain that extends about maybe 3 miles is described, you know, sort of wide like that, and maybe like 5, 6, I can't remember how many miles, you know, long, but not very big. It's a middle-sized hill. So Nanda Maharaj has 900,000 cows. Where are you going to put all those cows? And the inhabitants of Vrindavan and all the families and paraphernalia and all the creatures that were there, part of the, you know, buffaloes and all the other creatures. Where are you going to put them? So they wouldn't feed in that sort of a small space. But Govardhan expanded. This expanded, it says, 30 miles. And what to speak of that? Krishna say, if it was required, you can actually shelter the whole 3 worlds under Govardhan. So it is explained that Govardhan was in such ecstasy that Govardhan also displayed this inconceivable potency of being able to shelter. And not only that, but inconceivable potencies also, all this display of power by Indra was nothing. It was just like, you know, this power of thunderbolts that is Indra's greatest weapon. And, you know, this weapon of the thunderbolt is celebrated throughout the, you know, the Vedas as such a powerful weapon. As it was hitting Govardhan with all its might, Govardhan was feeling that it was, you know, flower petals. You know, when we do the Pushpanjali ceremony, the Pushpa Abhishek to Shrimati Radharani, and then the devotees throw the petals, you know, out of the altar, and then the devotees start to throw petals at everyone. That's what Govardhan was feeling like, you know, it was such an ecstasy that sometimes he didn't feel anything that was, you know, like that. So all this display of power, nothing to Krishna and to Govardhan. And not only that, inconceivably, because, okay, you may think, okay, so all the inhabitants of Vrindavan were being protected under the hill. But the animals who were on the hill receiving all that, you know, big, big sort of display of power and tragedy, they also were not feeling the slightest discomfort, you say here. Not even, you know, they were, nothing was happening. So you can imagine sort of how baffling this was to Indra, that all this display of power was nothing, doing nothing, nothing. Even to the hawks, the wild hawks and the deers that were on the top of the mountain and were not, you know, under the shelter of the mountain underneath. So that's Krishna's inconceivable potencies. Parasha Shaktir Vivadait, what is it? Parasha Shaktir Vidadaiva Shujyate. That Krishna has all these inconceivable, unlimited potencies. And all these unlimited potencies automatically fulfills Krishna's desires. And Krishna is a Shaktiman, is the origin, is the source of all powers. And therefore, he is the source of Indra's power. And the demigods, they know very well that Krishna established this perfect system in the universe, in which not only demigods, but man, they function under this very perfect and structure system, in which there's prosperity and there is harmony in the universe when this system, Krishna's system, is arranged. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sahajagya prajasristva puravacha prajapati anena prasavishyadyam esho bostu stakama duk, that in the beginning of creation, the Lord sent forward generations of men and demigods and blessed them by saying, be thou happy. So he created these structures of men and demigods along with the sacrifice, this jagya, for the pleasure of Vishnu. And then he said, he benedicted them by saying, be thou happy by the performance of this jagya. This jagya becomes, you know, the means, at the heart of this structure. By the performance of this jagya, everything that is desirable for living happily and achieving liberation will be provided for human society. So, this system in which human society performs jagyas and the demigods collect that jagya on behalf of the Lord. If we don't do that jagya and offer that to the demigods, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one becomes a thief. He says, work done as a sacrifice. No, sorry. He says that in charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of jagya, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gift without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. And a thief is someone who gets punished by the law. So if you are a thief, you will be punished by the law. So the demigods are the representatives of the Lord, because the Lord established that also in this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that this sacrifice is for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. Yagyartha karmano nyatra, that this work, this whatever, this yagyartha, Krishna is called yagya, and the artha of all works is for his pleasure. Is for his pleasure. So the demigods have that position. On behalf of the Lord, they accept the sacrifice that are for his pleasure. They collect that sacrifice, and then they bestow upon human beings the things, the necessities of their life. Something like, there is services that the government give to the citizens, but you have to pay taxes. You have to pay a fee. So, you know, there's electrical bill that you have to pay. There is gas bills. there is taxes that you have to pay to the government, and there are governing officials who accept that on behalf of the government. It's not that they decide, oh, now I'm all powerful and then all this is meant for me. If they do that, then they're doing something criminal. So Blokevich, what was his name, ended in jail because, you know, as a mayor, he thought he can do whatever he want. And now the guy is free, I think. Yes. Yeah. So we have examples like that. So the demigods, they know this very well. They know. Man may forget. Human conditioned souls may forget that their work, their sacrifice is meant for Krishna's pleasure. But the demigods won't forget. And if the demigods forget, just like in the case of Indra, Krishna will correct them. Because they are devotees. So Krishna will correct them. And this is what is being described in this pastime. First, Krishna established that, okay, this is something that is part of the Vedic tradition, to offer sacrifice for the pleasure of the demigods, or to offer sacrifice to the demigods, to satisfy the demigods. But it is understood that this sacrifice ultimately is for the benefit of Lord Vishnu. So if you actually go to Lord Vishnu, if you offer to the Lord, then you don't have to go through the demigods if you go directly into the service of the Lord. So there's a very nice verse that that Krishna tells Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, that, you know, explains this situation. Krishna tells Uddhava, as long as one is not satiated by fruitive activities and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act accordingly, according to the regulated principles of Vedic injunctions. So if one doesn't have full faith on Lord Krishna's system, if one is not able to fully surrender exclusively to Krishna, that mam ekam saranam braja, then this system of Vedic injunctions of sacrificing, doing sacrifices for the demigods, then must be followed for human society. So the karma kanda system is there for people who are, it is explained, is less intelligent. It's less intelligent, but still it is prescribed. It is prescribed in the Vedas for this type of people who are not satiated by fruitive activities, that are basically fully absorbed in this enjoyment of fruitive work. That is their goal. And for people like that, then follow the karmakanda process. Follow the Vedas like that. And Krishna says that for them, in the seventh chapter of the Gita, he says that he gives the faith to this type of people to worship the particular demigod and obtain his desires. But actually, all these benefits Krishna says, are bestowed by me alone. Krishna is the one who gives this benefit, not the demigods. The demigods are simply representative of Krishna. So, Krishna is not only teaching Indra, but he's teaching human society that in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna say, forget about all these flowery words of the Vedas. Give up all these dharmas that are there and just take this exclusive dharma of surrendering to me. Just fully surrender to Krishna. And for one who is able to do that, then we have, you know, the famous verse that Prabhupada quotes a lot, Narada Muni talking to Maharaj Yudhisthira, Devarsi Bhutapta Nrinam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Najamni Charajam Sarvatmana Yasharanam Sarajam Gato Mukundam Parihitya Kartam. Prabhupada, you know, this is a phrase that he quotes a lot. Gato Mukundam Parihitya Kartam. O king, one who has given all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relative friends, mankind, or even the forefathers who have passed away. Since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, one who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately. Automatically, by serving the Lord, one serves all others that we are indebted to. It is explained that we are indebted to the demigods because they provide the necessities of life. So we have to offer to the demigods. You know, we have to pay their service by an offering. It is said that we also, from other living beings, well, the great sages give us the wisdom and the guidance. Dakshin, you know, in general, you give to the saintly persons because they give the wisdom and guidance to society. Ordinary living beings, even, you know, trees, you know, in a hot day, we sit under a tree and receive the nice breezes and like that, and it's cooling. And in the morning, we hear the birds, you know, so they please our minds, and like that, you know, the cows give us milk. So ordinary living beings, we have some debt to pay to them. And the relatives, you know, our fathers, mothers, who give us, you know, shelter, education, society give us that, friends, mankind, forefathers give us traditions and give us, you know, set up the whole cultural morals that we follow. So we all indebted. So therefore, for a religious person, one have to perform all these different duties to fulfill a debt to all these different personalities. So we have to do regularly pin the ceremony for the forefathers. We have to offer, you know, worships and jagyas to different demigods, you know, like that. And we have to do our service in society. We have to serve our parents. We have to serve, you know, we have to protect the animals and the environment, all these things are duties of a religious person. But it is explained that that's all automatically taken care when one surrenders and offers one's loving service to the Supreme Lord. Because none of these entities are separate from the Lord. They are parts and parcels of the Lord. So therefore, the other famous verse that Prabhupada quotes, same Narada Muni quotes this verse when he instructs the prachetas, the pouring the water on the root of the tree. As pouring water on the root of the tree energizes the trunk, branches, twigs, and everything else, and as supplying food to the stomach, enlivens the senses and limbs of the body, simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service, automatically satisfy the demigods who are parts of that Supreme Personality. So, this is the message that Krishna is giving us through this. The intelligent will simply surrender and take shelter to Krishna directly. And automatically, all these different duties will be taken care of. We just simply have to lovingly accept Krishna's invitation. And Krishna says that you do that and you don't have to worry anymore. He will protect. He will give protection. You don't have to worry of the reactions of any that may occur by just giving up something just for the service of Krishna. And that's the position of the Brijavasis. So the Brijavasis sacrifice that tradition, and now Indra is showing this huge anger, and it's distracting me too. That's distracting me, but I guess, you know, they say. Well, if you go, right. So Krishna says, Masuchaha, do not worry, he will protect. He will protect. So, which is something very beautiful and reassuring. The person cannot read that there is closed. The temple is closed. Yeah, temple is closed. Yeah. Oh. Just you go and inform him that the temple is closed. Just. No. You go. Yeah. Tell him that the temple is closed. It's closed because of the coronavirus. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I finish here. There's the beauty of Krishna's offering protection, and when he says, you know, the famous verse, "Ananyas chintayantomam ye jana pariupashate tesham nitya vijukta nam yoga shema bahamyaham," that he personally protects what the devotee have. He personally carry out what the devotee lacks. So Krishna becomes personally involved like that, just for the sake of the devotee. But only that is for those who have exclusive devotion of him, who are constantly meditating in his transcendental form. And so the Brijavasis are the zenith of this type of devotee, are the topmost devotees that are fully absorbed. They don't know anything but Krishna. And then Krishna reciprocates accordingly, offering his full protection. That even those simple animals on the top of Govardhan, they were fully protected. They all, you know, these are the Brijavasis. Who can understand, you know, the position of the Brijavasis? And Krishna will protect them. We will know also this verse always, we hear this story of the Brahmana associated with this verse, Ananyas Chintayantumam, that scratch, he couldn't understand how is it possible that Krishna personally comes and protects and delivers, you know, and provides and carry out, you know, carry what you lack. He personally will come and carry what you lack. That's not possible. Besides, you know, I mean, the story goes, you know the story? That was a poor Brahmana. You know, he was with his wives, they were very poor. And his life was to beg. You know, whatever litter he begs, he brings, you know. And they were very pure Brahmanas, devotees. And they were very satisfied, both husband and wife. They were always absorbed. They were this type of high elevated devotees, always absorbed in chanting and hearing and, you know, living the life for the pleasure of Krishna. So, but when the Brahmana reading Bhagavad Gita came with this verse, he was puzzled. And then on the top of that, he looks around and say, well, you know, they're very poor. They have nothing. They hardly eat. You know, there was so much that was nothing. Not even the rats will come because there was nothing to eat. He didn't have a pot to hold the water. He didn't have anything. Then how is that this is definitely this verse, you know, possibly was not even spoken by Krishna. It most likely was someone added this verse or changed Krishna's word. Krishna could not, and how Krishna will do that personally? With his energies, he can, you know, have a wealthy man just provide something for you or a king. But him personally, why he will do that? Definitely bogus. So he scratched the verse with his red pen. He scratched the verse, you know. And then, so he had doubts. Because, you know, so then he went on to beg. And during the day begging, he was not being successful. No one was giving anything. So he spent the whole day begging, and no one would give anything on the top of that. But meanwhile, this beautiful, gentle, blackish, you know, like a monsoon cloud boy in a yellow garments went to his home where his wife was. And the wife actually was not properly dressed because they were so poor that she had to share, they shared the clothes. So the man, when he went out, he was using the cloth. So she was not fully dressed, partially naked. So when the boy came, this beautiful boy, carrying this large stick, and with, you know, in one end was all these bags of grains and milk and ghee and spice, and the other one was spices and fruits and vegetables. Very heavy load, you know, you don't even, you know, not even an you put in an ass, you know, it was like super heavy. And this boy was carrying this heavy load. And then he came to the door and knocked, and the wife, you know, asked, so is the disciple of the Brahmana. I'm his disciple, so he sent me here to bring all this stuff. So she say, well, she cannot open because she's not properly dressed. So Krishna gave him his chadar. So she dressed with Krishna's chadar. And when he saw this beautiful boy with this load, you know, I mean, he was perspiring so much and with marks on his shoulders, he say, what is this? You know, well, my Guru Maharaj sent me. He doesn't have disciples. And, you know, so anyway. So she was all confused. No. He is my Guru Maharaj and you're my Guru Mata. So he sent all this stuff. So he said, but how he put you, such a small boy, to carry all that? This man is very cruel. And he say, and then he saw that when he gave each other, that in his back, it was all these red scratches. You know, he was all cut with a scratch. And what happened? And he did that to me. He did that to me. And then she was horrified. This man, you know, is not, you know, he poses like this gentle Brahmana, but he's actually a very cruel person. How he can treat this beautiful boy like this? You must be hungry. So she started to cook. And then it came the Brahmana back. And then, you know, she started to chastise him. You cruel man. You know, how can you do that to this boy? And he was so confused. Which boy? The boy, your disciple that you sent. You know, I have no disciples. Which boy is this? So he brought all these things and you make it work. Like, you know, she was very heavy. And come and see the boy. So when they came to see the boy was already gone. Krishna was gone. So so then he was so confused that he just went to read the Bhagavad Gita, and then he saw the verse. This verse, Ananyas Chintayantomam verse. And then he realized that Krishna came and he personally delivered. And Krishna is none different than his words. And therefore, Krishna says that it doesn't matter what, the devotee will never perishes. You know, he asked Arjuna, you declare Kunteya Pratipanihi. You declare Name Bhakta Pranashati, that my devotee will never, he's infallible. The devotees will never be put into trouble. He always will carry his word. Okay, I pass my time. Keep it short, Judge Baladev.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. You made a lot of wonderful points, forgive me for not organizing my thoughts. That's why sometimes when it's crunch time, it's harder. But anyway, I'll just speak whatever the Lord inspires me.
My fault because I took a little longer.
That's okay. I think it's okay when people go over time, but when we criticize other people for going over time, that's when, drama happens. You were mentioning doing things for Krishna pleasure. And we see, I'll try to connect these points because I appreciated this pastime where Govardhan Hill transformed from an ordinary hill to an extraordinary hill simply by being touched by Krishna. And one analogy I love is that when a computer is connected to its power source, it's attractive. When it's disconnected, it's unattractive. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajate mam buddha bhava samavita. Krishna says, I am the power source of everything. Those who connect to me can do extraordinary things. Mukam koroti vachanam, that verse, etc. And so we see that it says if the Govardhan, if required, it could give shelter to the three worlds. Now look at Prabhupada. There's a book, I believe, and Prabhupada is known for this. I think there's a book by one devotee who named this book that Prabhupada has built a house in which the whole world can live, I believe. Have you heard of that book or something? Or that phrase?
That's in the Lilamrita.
Yeah, so the real reason I appreciate it because I'm teaching Mridanga to a lot of students lately, and it could take my energy, it could fry me out, especially if they don't learn. Now, look at Prabhupada. He taught people Mridanga, deity worship, how to cook, so many things. But how is it possible that he has so much unlimited energy? Because he was properly connected to Krishna. When we're improperly connected to Krishna, like you were saying, we should do things for Krishna's pleasure. When we do it for our own pleasure, then one person could take so much energy from us. And I'll share a nice reference for devotees, and then I have one other point. So this is from the Bhagavatam. These are some nice points I keep in mind I'm sharing with devotees. This is from the 10th canto, chapter 62, verse 23 and 24. You could check that one out, and there's a similar verse in 11th canto, chapter 26, verse 7 through 8. Basically, long story short, Aniruddha, he was in love with a beautiful woman named Usha, and King Purava was in love with a beautiful woman named Urvasi. And both these verses are similar. They says, 1 year with my beautiful damsels seems like one moment. And we see that throughout the Bhagavatam. Spending a long time with those who arouse our senses, it seems like one moment. Spending one moment with those who don't arouse our senses seems like 1 year. And therefore, we become aggressive in demoniac, just like the demons were aggressive to the demigods when they didn't rouse their senses, but they were very kind and patient to the Mohini Murti. And that's one indication that a person is disconnected from Krishna. And so that's why I love this Govardhan Hill. It says when the Govardhan Hill was touched by the Lord, even thunderbolts of Indra felt like flowers. When we're improperly connected to Krishna, even flowers seem like thunderbolts. And one last, this is an encouragement for other devotees because, like I said, we're all meant to encourage each other. Because just like I was recently talking to Ruchi for 3 hours, how is it possible for me to share with Ruchi because she was also sharing with me? And Prabhupada says this is a duty of Acharya to hear others speak, not just speak himself. This is in Madhya Lila, chapter 25, verses 267. So he says, Lord Chaitanya empowered, he not only spoke, but he empowered his devotees to speak while he listened. So it's the duty of others to not only speak, but also to hear others to see whether they're actually hearing Krishna consciousness or learning Krishna consciousness. And this is one reason I appreciated about this verse is because when we're connected to Krishna properly and we're properly encouraging others, not doing anything for our own sense gratification, being patient, with those who arouse our senses, and vice versa. Obviously, I made my point, but there's one pastime, and this is the last point I really appreciate about this verse, and one I'll connect it to the Dhruva Maharaj pastime. Now, Dhruva Maharaj, he was only a 5-year-old boy, and it's described he wanted to offer some prayers to the Lord. But how is it possible for an ordinary boy to become an extraordinary orator. The Lord just says, try your best. If we try our best, God will help us. If we try to be the best, God will humble us, as in this Indra pastime and so many other pastimes. So he says, my dear Dhruva Maharaj, just try your best, and you become an ordinary boy to an extraordinary orator. Mukam Koroti Vachanam Pangulang, that verse, etc. We always quote that. So this, for references, I actually wrote this down. I'm glad it kind of connected to this verse today. Let's see. This is from a Bhagavatam. I think I have the wrong paper. Anyways, anyone can check the Dhruva Maharaj pastime, but there's a verse in it where it's described that he says, Dhruva, just offer prayers to me. It's described that the Lord took his conch shell and he touched the head of Dhruva Maharaj. And because he touched the head of Dhruva Maharaj spoke very beautiful and eloquent prayers of devotion. And there's a nice Christian story that basically sums up this up. Once upon a time, there was a pastor who told the man in his congregation, my dear sir, I want you to put a $100 bill in your wife's Bible. So the man agreed. So during that Sunday sermon, the pastor told the woman of this man, my dear lady, can you please stand up? She says, yes, pastor. He says, I want you to open your Bible and give me a $100 bill. She says, pastor, I don't have a $100 bill in my Bible. He says, do you trust me? She says, yes, pastor, I trust you. But trust me, I don't have a $100 bill in my Bible. So he insisted. So in frustration, she opened her Bible, and there was, long and behold, a $100 bill. And she asked him, how'd that get there? The pastor said, I put it there. The moral of the story is, God will never ask you for something without first putting it in you. And so if I had to ask a question, I pretty much made my points, but my question is that what are some steps, or what are some steps we could do to not only follow Prabhupada's teaching of encouraging each other, the Bhagavatam's teaching of encouraging each other, and not just being aroused when we speak for hours, but cannot hear somebody speak for 2 minutes. And also, what are some steps we could do to actually, you know, look in the mirror and say, or realize that why am I so impatient with devotees? How is it possible that Prabhupada could be so patient with millions of devotees, but I cannot be patient with one devotee? How is that possible? So what are some steps we could do, or how can we realize whether we're engaging in mixed devotion, pretender devotion? That's why we're what's that verse? Yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarva guna istatra samasate suraha. By engaging in bhagavati bhakti, we develop good qualities, but we see when we don't have these qualities, we're actually making ourselves miserable. And when we're miserable, we commit aparas and we discourage each other. And so, anyway, my there's no question. I don't have any question. I'll just say this. I'm just encouraging devotees, just like others have encouraged me. And this is the last point I'll make. Just like Hanuman tried to minimize the squirrel, but the squirrel never wasted his time criticizing Hanuman. He just ignored him, and he let Lord Rama set Hanuman straight. So I would just say that if anyone discourages us, don't waste your time. Just speak about Krishna, and the Lord will set you other straight. Don't waste your time. And that's one thing I've learned throughout my Krishna consciousness, is that we're all meant to encourage each other, but we see that devotees will not always encourage us. But that's okay. They don't have to. The Lord will set them straight. And so that's one lesson I've always taken mine. I'm sharing that with others. You may or may not have something to say, but that's some points I always like to keep in mind. So anyways, thanks for letting me share. Hare Krishna.